Now it's time to take a look at your Vancouver Warriors and the rest of the lacrosse league around North America. Here's the host of Warriors Nation, Dave Sheldon.
Good evening. Welcome to Warriors Weekly right here on your home of the National Lacrosse League and the Vancouver Warriors. It's Sportsnet 650. My name is Dave Sheldon. Welcome back once again. I always love having good conversations about lacrosse, and we'll do that again tonight with a few of our guests. Adam Levy will join me in a few moments' time. He's the NLL contributor for the Vancouver Warriors, also Lacrosse Flash, does some great stuff on Twitter, covers lacrosse wall-to-wall. And Steve Ewan, longtime reporter here in Vancouver, covers the Giants, covers the Warriors, of course, covers all things sports in Vancouver, and very knowledgeable about the game of lacrosse. I've known Steve for over 20 years, almost 25, and a lot of it was spent in lacrosse talking to him about that. So we'll get his perspective on what's going on with the Warriors. And I'll lead off by saying I don't think that there's one person in this Warriors organization that is enamored with what happened down in San Diego on Saturday. And let me just preface it by saying I've never seen it before. I talked to a couple players. They've never seen it before. And from a coaching staff and from a management point of view, when you give up a 10-goal run, it doesn't matter what league you're in. You're not going to win a lot of games. Vancouver had a 7-2 second-quarter lead on the San Diego Seals in San Diego. They were running them out of their own barn, and suddenly the lights went out, and the next thing you knew, it was a 10-goal run, and the horse ran out of the stable. You can use whatever analogy you want. It was not good for Vancouver. They went from being up 7-2 to being down 12-7 before Derek Lloyd broke the 10-goal streak. It went to 12-8, and that was really it for Vancouver. It went to 14-8. Vancouver made it 14-9 before the final score ended up being 15-10 in favor of the San Diego Seals. What is there to talk about with the exception of the fact that this team cannot and will not succeed unless they play the full 60? And we've had this conversation, and there are people right now rolling their eyes going, damn it, man, you always talk about the full 60. This team currently isn't good enough to win when they put in the full 40 or to put in the full 35 or to put in the full 50. They need 60. Let's do a little bit of math, shall we? End of the first quarter, Vancouver had a 5-1 lead. Might have been the best first quarter they've played since they moved downtown. 5-1. Lowen with a pair. Shes Jones and Ball had goals. And the reason why I say one of the best first quarters is that they ran Nick DeMood out of the net, put Frank Siliano back in there. And then you have one of those plays. You know, when you get possession in the final 30 seconds, the shot clock gets turned off, your team calls a timeout, you're allowed to pull your goalie. You pull your goalie and you score with 3 seconds left, which is what Ball did from Logan Shuss with 3 seconds left in the first quarter to go from 4-1 to 5-1. You've not just taken the nail and thrown it in the coffin. You've taken the nail gun and you said, you know what? Get out of this. And then Vancouver goes and makes it 7-2, and they light up Siliano for a couple goals, and they put DeMood back in at 7-2. And then Vancouver said, well, that's good enough. You know what? We've totally thrown them off their game. They've pulled their goalie twice. They're all over the place. And you do what every team does that doesn't know how to win on a consistent basis. You take your foot off the pedal. Human nature. We got them right. We want them, boys. Let's go fart around and see what we could do. And that's exactly what happened. Offensive sets after that were god-awful until about the fourth quarter when it didn't matter. This team found a way to lose because they couldn't put a full 60 in, and they'll admit to it. I work for the team. I'm not being critical. I'm being honest. That isn't what we want to see on a game-to-game basis. They know it. We know it. You know, having worked for a variety of teams in the Lower Mainland, the one thing that I've learned and the one thing that you know as a listener and we know as fans is, man, oh, man, traction is tough when you are losing. When you're winning, you want to be winning all the time. When you're losing, man, what's the thing you want to do? You want to avoid losing. But then there becomes this complacency about, you know what? Oh, damn, we're going to lose again. You can't have that mentality. Now, I don't think that this team does have that mentality, but, and I say this, it creeps in at the very inopportune moments. How many times this season, has the Vancouver Warriors had the San Diego Seals not only on the ropes, on the canvas? And there hasn't been a time this year where Vancouver has put their boots on the neck of the Seals and said, enough's enough, you're down. You're down, you're done. When San Diego won their first game of the year against Vancouver, when they won their first game this year, 11-10 in overtime, Vancouver had 6-1 goal leads they couldn't hold. Six. This game, they were up 7-2. They're up 4-0. They're up 5-1. They're up 7-2. And then that was it. It was 7-5 at the half. It was, get ready for it, 13-8 after three. And then at that point, San Diego did what every good team does, and they finished off the Warriors. They ticked off Mitch Jones to the point of where he fought a guy, Eli Gobrek, who outside of the Gobrek family, no one knows who the hell it is. But he was in Mitch's back pocket the whole game because Vancouver could not find a way to get him out of Mitch Jones' pocket. Jonesy only had 3 points on the night, 2 goals, 1 assist. He had 11 shots on goal. He took the 5-minute major, which took him off the floor in the fourth quarter when they could have used him on the floor, and mission accomplished. Now, yeah, Eli Gobrek took an abundance of 15 stitches to get closed up after the Mitch Jones fight. So you could say, well, geez, Mitch won the fight. Mitch Jones is not on the Vancouver Warriors to win fights. He's on the Vancouver Warriors to win lacrosse games. So for those of you who feel somewhat resolved with the fact that Jones won his fight, congratulations. You beat up a guy who's probably the 7th or 8th best defenseman on the team, and you took off the number one offensive player on a team that is struggling to find offense on a regular basis. It's as simple as that. And more has to happen for the Vancouver Warriors to win. We'll talk more about the game right now with Adam Levy, who does a great job covering the National Lacrosse League. Go on and find him on Twitter. And also, he's an NLL contributor for Lacrosse Flash. Am I correct on this, Adam? Fill me in about what you're not doing now. How about that? That might take a little shorter time. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing really well. Yeah, it does feel like I have my hand in a bunch of baskets. But yeah, you can find me on Lacrosse Flash as a contributor and on NLL.com as a feature writer and the Warriors beat writer. So I am doing a bunch of things.
You know what? Love talking to you because we always have an interesting conversation about whether it be about league stuff or about what happened this past weekend. I've not seen this. I've seen 9 goal runs. I've seen 8 goal runs, but I've never seen a 10 goal run. Vancouver had this game in their hands, 7-2 early second quarter. Logan Schuss at 6:47. Makes it 7-2, and then the bottom falls out. And it's very easy to point at, oh, well, geez, the goalie, or was it the defense? But this was a complete team rupture from a standpoint of offensive sets not being good. And then when that happens, your defense is out there. Bob Snyder gets hurt, so your face-off guy's moot. There's a number of things that led to this disaster for Vancouver.
Yeah, it really did seem watching it that the energy was just sucked out of the team. And I think that you're right. You know, there could be a multitude of factors as to why that is. I mean, Bob had been 2-on-2 at the faceoff X on the night. And then, you know, Owen Barker and Sam Clare try and step in. But, you know, when we talk about the discussion if faceoffs matter, I think, you know, it's what you do with those faceoffs. And the fact that San Diego was able to put so much pressure on that Vancouver defense that just seemed out of sorts, especially in that third quarter. You know, you're putting all that pressure on Penny, and, you know, he made 50 saves on the night, but, you know, he's going to let a few in. And the way that San Diego offense can run when they're fully clicking, and, you know, you saw that from Casey Jackson, and Austin Stotts was a great contributor, not only with assists, but 2 goals himself, and they just have so many weapons, and you can't afford to take a quarter off or to have lapses like the Warriors did. So really unfortunate to see that happen, and terrible to see kind of the after effect of seeing Bob go down like that and what it seemed to impact the team.
Yeah, it's interesting. Bob Snyder, for those of you who don't listen on a regular basis, brought in this year as a face-off specialist because this team, Vancouver, last year was one of the worst face-off teams in the league at about 33-34%. They're running about 45-47% this year, which when you think about it is, wow, Jesus, still not 50%. But when you look at the league average and you look at the three heavyweights at the top with New England and Rochester and are not New England, Halifax, and I'm skipping the third one off the top of my head.
Philadelphia.
Yeah, with Batiste. I mean, these guys are unbelievable. They're running about 78-79% each team. Everyone else is below 500. So really, it's about when you're taking on the teams that don't have the face-off specialist to hold your own. And when you game plan for having Bob Snyder in there and winning 50% of your draws, it changes the whole dynamic when he's not out there to make that happen. I don't want to put that all on Bob's injury, but it certainly, like you said, changed the dichotomy of how the game gets played when you're constantly having to play defense on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I think that you make a great point about when you're facing a guy like Brandon Clellan, who the Warriors know very well from his time in Vancouver. You know, he has the ability to be a good face-off guy when he needs to be, and he showed that he stepped up, winning 22 or 27 face-offs this past game. But, you know, he has times where he struggles, and this was an opportunity for the Warriors to kind of match him and go 50-50, and that didn't happen. And, you know, I think it comes down to momentum building. You know, even if you're winning 50%, if you're winning every other face-off or trading them off, then what happens is that no team or no offensive side has that same ability to build the momentum. And you could see the momentum building every time that San Diego would score or win a face-off, push the defense. If you're always having that defense on the back foot, then you're tiring them out, and then you're tiring Penny out by having to always focus on trying to make a save. And I think that all of those things kind of came into play.
Our guest is Adam Levy. This is Sports. Pardon me. This is Sportsnet 650. I'm Dave Sheldon, Warriors Weekly until the top of the hour. A very busy day here on Sportsnet. So lots going on today. I want to touch a little bit on the offense, because I think that also led to the downfall of what happened on Saturday. Because it's very easy to say, well, it was the face-offs and that led to defensive pressure and Penny and blah, blah, blah. There's a number of things that I want to talk about from an offensive standpoint. At one point, this team had a 7-2 lead, and they were scoring at will. In fact, they had that team so bamboozled that Damoud was taken off for Ciliano, and then Ciliano was taken back off for Damoud. And it was, they just couldn't make heads or tails of the offense. And sometimes when the offense clicks that proficiently, especially for Vancouver, I mean, Vancouver's averaging just under 10 goals a game. When they get seven in the first 22 minutes, you're going, okay, this could be our night. Sometimes human nature creeps in, complacency creeps in, and you try and get a little pretty out there. And I think that happened to Vancouver. They didn't have some great offensive sets. And when you're turning the ball over after 10, 15 seconds and giving it back to an offense that wants to get back into gear, and the defense that comes back on the floor tired, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that you're exactly, you kind of hit the nail on the head there, is that, you know, they did get into that run, and it did seem like the team was getting comfortable. You know, they had a couple of offensive sets in transition that they maybe couldn't have capitalized. I did like the attacking from Keegan Ball. He had a couple of times where he was getting close to the crease. He did a really good job at feeding his teammates. He had four assists on the night. But I think that, you know, with, you know, Chris Gill talks about playing a whole 60 minutes all the time. And I think that with this Warriors team, you know, things have been going better for them overall on the season. Yes, offensively, maybe it hasn't been there. But I think that having them be allowed to click in and things like that, I think that maybe that was an unfamiliar position for them to be in, especially for Riley Lowen, who had hit a breakout game, his first hat trick with the Warriors. And it was really great to see him start going. But then he kind of quieted off after those first two goals in that first quarter.
Adam, we talk about the Warriors, and we talk about Mitch Jones, and we've made the point of saying that this team has had issues scoring this year. But Mitch Jones, to give you some perspective on this, he leads the league still in scoring on a team that might have, you know, next to New York, maybe the worst goals for in the National Lacrosse League. And so teams are picking up on this, because these teams aren't stupid. They understand what teams get driven by, and in this case it's Mitch Jones. And for the last two games, especially against Toronto and even more so against San Diego, they've almost been playing, you know what, you can beat us with anybody but Mitch Jones. And I think we saw that with Gobrek being in his hip pocket the whole night until the big fight in the fourth quarter. You saw Gobrek follow him around regardless of what system San Diego was playing. They said, we are not going to let Mitch beat us. And that is, in fact, what happened. They didn't let Mitch beat them at all.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to Coach Gill about this, about how when Jones had this hot start, you know, he had a discussion with Mitch, and he said, look, Mitch, we know that this means that these defenses are going to track you more. And as you said, we've seen that, particularly now that we have defensive schemes focusing on what Mitch can do. But what Mitch then needs to do, and what he has shown that he can do, is he's got to find that open man, and then that open man or the other open guys on offense need to kind of contribute and make something happen on their own. But Mitch and Coach have kind of had these discussions, and I think that it's about really kind of finalizing those positions and making sure that his teammates are finishing the ball when they need to.
Well, and that's been the case, right, is that for the first part of the season that was happening. Hasn't happened the last couple of games for Jordan McBride. Hasn't happened the last couple of games for Logan Schuss, although he had a couple last night. You saw Riley Lowen step up. Keegan starting to get his looks as well. But Joel McCready was somewhat silent in this game against San Diego. And it's not to call guys out. It's to simply say that this team, there are no shortcuts for this team right now. There's no, you don't have, Church on one side and someone else on the other side. You don't have a yin and yang where you can just say, okay, well, it's not Ball tonight. It's Jones. It's not Jones tonight. It's Schuss. It's got to be everybody by committee to make this team hum on offense.
Yeah, and you mentioned Logan, and it's great to see that he had two goals, especially the week prior or leading up to this game. You know, he was celebrating a friend's wedding in Mexico, so he was having a good time, but he really stepped up with his two goals and two assists. But he took 14 shots on goal, four shots off goal, so two goals on 18 total shots. You would want a better conversion rate than that overall, especially for what Logan's capable of. Logan is has the ability to be one of the elite scorers in the NLL. So to see him not convert at a higher rate than that, and you know, you mentioned, of course, you need secondary scorers. So Keegan Ball and, of course, Jordan McBride, they had amazing years last season, and I think that maybe defenses are also saying, okay, maybe they aren't one-hit wonders, and you are seeing, you know, maybe Jordan not get the chances that he was able to in the crease. He's got amazing footwork, but, you know, he kind of has a signature style of how he scores, and I think defenses are also starting to zone in on that.
Adam Levy is our guest here on Sportsnet 650. It's Warriors Weekly, your weekly look at the National Lacrosse League and also the Vancouver Warriors right here on local radio in Vancouver. And, of course, you can get us online, VancouverWarriors.com, or go and go to sportsnet.ca/650 to pick up our archive, or also to listen live as well. Adam, I do want to talk a little bit about the rest of the league in a second here, and mm-hmm. But before I get to that, this loss by Vancouver puts them at 4-7. If they had won the game, they go to 5-6. They're right in the mix with Colorado. They're behind Calgary, but with this loss, 4-7 makes it a tough hill to climb. It's because of the wild card, and everyone's going, well, the wild card gives more chance for teams to get in. It does, but it doesn't, in the sense that there are three teams in the East, there are three teams in the North that, you know, no disrespect to New York and to Rochester, they get to beat up on the Sisters of the Poor a little bit here. And this Western Division, to run the gauntlet of what Vancouver has left, it's going to be some tough sledding for them to get to 8-9 wins is where you have to be probably to even have a sniff at the postseason.
Yeah, I think that you got it exactly right with the West Division. And the thing about the West is that we've seen this year that everyone's kind of beating everyone. So when that happens, it creates a level playing field. And then when you look at the standings, you know, everyone is still only separated by 3.5 games. Saskatchewan is now pulling away at 6-2, and they now look like the team that everyone expects them to be. Calgary, with defensive lapses, obviously you don't expect Christian Delbianco to allow as many goals as he did this past weekend against Georgia, but they still pull out the win because of Reese Dutch, Dane Doby, and Curtis Dixon. And then San Diego, they just now with all their pieces back, you know, if they can put it together and DeMood or Chiliano can step up, there's just so many teams in the West that are fighting for it. And I think that because of what's happening in the North Division and the East Division, it seems like those are six teams right there that are going to get in. So it looks like there's only going to be two in the West And I think at this point you can say Saskatchewan is a lock. So then there's only one spot left and four teams competing for that one spot. And they all look to have their games on the rise right now.
They do. And that makes this game against Georgia ever so important, because if there's a team that you need to pull back into that crowd at 5-4, it's got to be Georgia. If there's the chance for a third team to get in from the West Division, it's having to bring down the Georgia Swarm, who are no pushovers. And like you said, not very often you can score 17 goals and lose a game, but that happened with Georgia there. They're formidable. They'll be a tough opponent this weekend. But if Vancouver can get the win, it drops Georgia to 5-5, and now they're in a dogfight with the Western Division teams to try and find that eighth and final playoff spot.
Right, and you mentioned San Diego, obviously, in the West Division. The issue with this past loss is that now the Warriors have also lost that season tiebreak to San Diego. So in order for them to leapfrog San Diego, they would just have to have a better record. And that is also just another hurdle. But yeah, with Georgia, they had a slow start to their season. They had three straight losses, but then they had three straight wins. Obviously, the heartbreaking loss at home to Calgary, 18-17 in overtime. But I would imagine they're thirsty to come back and win a game, because, as you mentioned, it's rare that you score 17 goals and lose. And I'm sure that Coach Eddie Como was telling the guys, look, you're going to go out there, score another 17 goals, and that you're not going to lose again. So I would imagine that Georgia team is going to come out flying. Hopefully, if you're a Warriors fan, you're going to hope that they have a little jet lag from a cross-country trip, as the Warriors experienced a couple times in February. But I would imagine that Georgia's going to come out flying.
They should, for sure. They're a tough team, and at the best of times, we saw that. Although, you know what? Vancouver played them tough last year. We're up 10-8 late in that game to let it slip away. So there's been some chances for Vancouver to have success against these elite teams as well. Last couple minutes here with you before I let you go tonight, Adam. There's Halifax, to me, has been, I don't want to call it the biggest surprise, but I think it's accurate to say they've been a very good surprise this year for the National Lacrosse League. They're 7-2. We haven't seen them live yet this year. We've seen them a lot, of course, on video, but from your standpoint, are they for real yet? Can they be considered contenders for what's going on? I know 7-2, everyone's going like, well, how can you not consider them contenders? And I'm like, man, the meat of the schedule, it gets tougher as you play later on in the season. I'm not sure I'm sold on Halifax yet. What do you think?
I think that, one, their offense is spread with talent. They've got five guys with double-digit goals, led by Cody Jamison and Ryan Benesch, who are obviously seasoned veterans who have dominated this league. Stephen Keogh has stepped up, which is really good. Austin Shanks had a really great game last time. And I think that one of the surprises, and I think where it comes from, is that Warren Hill has been a phenomenal goaltender for them, which people weren't expecting at 27 years old. You know, this is kind of his breakout season. Last year, he had a couple of opportunities in Rochester, but this is his year where he's kind of taken that starting role. And I think that he's really stepped up with 9.32 goals allowed per game. So, you know, he has been a really good surprise, but he's been consistent. And I think that obviously Saskatchewan beat up on them when they had their thrilling game that went to overtime and came down to the wire, and Saskatchewan ended up pulling that one out. But what was key in that game was that their resiliency. They were down 12-3 at one point, and they fought all the way back, and it really energized that home arena. And I think they've also been getting a lot of support at home, which we've experienced a couple times at Rogers Arena when the Warriors have stepped their play up from last year. The crowd shows up and the players show up. So I think that a bunch of different factors, from their offense to their goaltending, and obviously the support they're getting, has really risen this team up. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of surprises. I think another team you have to look at here would be Philadelphia, and that's also led by a goaltender who maybe you wouldn't have expected to be so good in Zach Higgins, but he's also been fairly consistent. Again, he got pulled this past weekend, but if you look at his overall performance over the year, he's been one of the top goaltenders, and that's why Philadelphia is 7-4.
Do you think, I mean, Saskatchewan 6-2, Calgary 4-4, and everyone goes, oh, Calgary's 4-4. Calgary gets Dane Doby back. He gets a six-goal game. Dixon's 5, Dutch's 4. I mean, you're not going to get those guys to score at that level of proficiency over the course of the season. The numbers I think you put on there were 44% efficiency for shooting. That's crazy. But those two teams have yet to play each other this year, and they get each other three times, including back-to-back in mid-April, which may define what happens in the West. I mean, I don't count out Calgary just yet, especially when they have Del Bianco between the pipes.
Yeah, I mean, Del Bianco, I actually wrote a piece for NHL.com. It was last year, and I boldly said that I think that he's the best goaltender in the NLL. And I think that that's just, you know, it's not just because of what he's doing at his age. I believe he's 22, 21. But he's just such a good, athletic, consistent goaltender. His ability to find the ball and get in good position makes him such a talent. And as I had mentioned previously, like, for him to allow 17 goals this past weekend, you just never see that from him. So I expect a couple of bounce back performances from him. And then, of course, with Dane Doby back, yeah, you're not going to get the kind of outpouring of scoring that you got from those three guys. It was 15 of the team's 18 goals, right? That's an absurd number to hear. You're going to need other guys to step up, but they have the other talent to do that. You know, they've had some young rookies like Hayden Dixon stepping up and other guys as well. So I think that Calgary is a team that's for real. And last season, you know, they won the championship when they faced resiliency. You know, they were without Reese Dutch for the beginning of the season. They had Dane Doby out for 6 games. Now everyone's back, right? And I expect that, you know, they're going to use that example of resiliency to really come out and put on a good showing.
Well, and before we dismiss Saskatchewan altogether, I think that they might have the most impressive team stat this year, and that is currently they are 5-0 on the road. They've only played 3 home games so far. They're a perfect 5-0 away from SaskTel Center. They're 1-2 at home, and they are usually very tough to deal with at home. So let's not write them off just yet either.
Yeah, SaskTel Center is one of the toughest arenas to play in all of the NLL up there with Colorado and Calgary, and they have one of the highest attendance. So that 12th man, so to speak, or I guess in the NLL it would be the sixth or seventh man, but you know that's really what they feed off of in that arena. And you know, when I was speaking to Coach Derek Keenan about this, you know, they have a lot of veteran guys who have been there for a while, and they had their stretch of Champions Cup and NLL Cup runs of recent date. But this team, you know, they can't do this forever. And I think that Coach Keenan is trying to say, like, look, we've been so successful for so long and so dominant in the West Division. Eventually, it's going to come to an end. So let's not let that happen now, and let's not let it happen sooner than it needs to. And I think that that will also click in with the team as well.
Always enjoy the conversation, Adam. Thanks for your time tonight. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks so much, Dave. Always appreciate it.
That was Adam Levy, NLL contributor for the Vancouver Warriors, also NLL.com and Lacrosse Flash. Find his stuff on Twitter as well. We'll take a break. Come back. We'll hear from Steve Ewan of the province. We'll also hear from David Camuzzi of the Vancouver Warriors about Country Night. Don't forget Country Night coming up this coming Saturday, February 29th, 7 o'clock start. Lots going on. We'll cover that in our next segment right here on Warriors Weekly, Sportsnet 650.
Now more of Warriors Weekly. Here's your host, Dave Sheldon.
Welcome back to Warriors Weekly right here on your home of the National Lacrosse League at Sportsnet 650. I'm Dave Sheldon with you till the top of the hour. And we talked about this before the break. We'll get to Steve Ewan in a moment here. But it's Country Night coming up on Saturday. Brought to you by Budweiser, February 29th, 7 o'clock start. Vancouver Warriors, Georgia Swarm. Yeah, it's a big game on the floor, but don't forget, it's going to be a great game and a great night at Rogers Arena. Grab your cowboy hat. Dress up in your country apparel. Cowboy boots, don't forget to wear your plaid. Ride your horse. No, don't ride your horse. Take the SkyTrain. Take a car. Head on down to Rogers Arena to watch the hometown Warriors take on the Georgia Swarm. You could ride a mechanical bull. There's also Wild West, a West Dodgeball Tournament in partnership with Urban Rec. But check out this lineup. Karen Lee Batten, the Hillside Outlaws, Kadu, and a post-game concert by Sean Austin. We'll talk more to David Camuzzi about this before the show ends. He's the Senior Director of Business Operations for the Vancouver Warriors. Big night coming up. How do you get your tickets to Country Night at Rogers Arena, brought to you by Budweiser, while you go to VancouverWarriors.com. VancouverWarriors.com or call 604-899-4625. All right, let's get to it, shall we? We've talked about having this next guest on for the last little while, and we get to have him on again on this show. He has covered sports in this market for the last two decades plus, including a lot of lacrosse, covers the Western Lacrosse Association, but also the National Lacrosse League. It's sports writer Steve Ewan from the province. Hi, Steve. How are you tonight?
Thanks so much.
Good to talk to you about all things lacrosse, but I think the first thing I'm going to ask you is that, and I said this to Adam Levy in our earlier segment, I don't know if I've seen a 10-goal run against a team before. I know the Stealth had some teams that were not great out at Langley Event Center, but when you have 10 going against you when you're up 7-2, it makes it difficult to get your head around what's going on.
Yeah, I was very... I just thought after the game in the 11-10 win in Rochester, I really thought this team had started to move, kind of move in the right direction. And I mean, you know, winning in Toronto is a hard thing. The following week, I understand that. Getting out to that great lead, I really thought they had found it, and I'm not sure where it just took off to, escaped to. So yeah, that's definitely alarming for Warriors fans.
When you look at it, and without reiterating what we talked about in the last segment with Adam, but when I look at it, I can't pinpoint it on Eric Penny. I can't pinpoint it on the defense. I can pinpoint it on everybody, because when you have 10 go against you that way, the first thing you have to think about is, if you're the defense, get a stop. If you're the goaltender, make a save. If you're the offense, okay, boys, let's give them 30 seconds, maybe generate a rebound, generate a shot, give ourselves a good offensive set. This was a failure on all those levels. Everybody was involved.
Everybody up and down the roster. So, I was really surprised, because I thought this team had kind of made some steps and made some strides, and it looks like in that 10-goal run, it looks like they took two or three steps backwards.
It was Steve Ewan, our guest right now. We're talking about all things Vancouver Warriors. He writes for the province and covers the team extensively as well. When you look at this team now, 4-7, and you see the trade deadline coming up, and you've seen Dan Richardson, the GM, he's not afraid to shake it up with some veterans. And I'm not saying that he's going to do it again, but does it not make sense for him to really evaluate what he's got here at this point and look at what he's been waiting for the last 2 years, and that's to try and build some more with the draft?
I think this Georgia Swarm game is huge for them. I think if they can get some traction there, I think Dan maybe stays, kind of stands pat, or maybe makes a small ad. If they lose this game, you've got a hard schedule down the stretch, and I think it's sell time. I think it's time to really look at this. There's still a lot of guys from that Stealth group that didn't win. I expected them to make strides this year. You're sitting on 4 wins. I think it might be time to kind of rebrand or kind of rebuild the core and change the core up a bit. I think we're getting to that. I think with where Calgary was with Dane Doby missing all those games, with where San Diego was with Austin Stotts missing all those games, I think this team needed to make some strides when those guys were out. Those guys are back now, and Vancouver's chasing. And I think if they don't make some real strides against George, I think Dan has some very hard calls.
Well,
him.
And to your point as well, when you look at teams that have made changes, a lot of them have made changes by drafting. You look at Philadelphia, who last year was a terrible team, but that was from an expansion point of view. They had their draft last year. They had their full draft this past year. So they've had two full drafts to look at things. Vancouver, when you look at their draft record, because they've had no draft to speak of, I mean, the fact they got Derek Lloyd, and he's a serviceable player in the National Lacrosse League, is one thing, but really they haven't had a player that has given them the breakout minutes. And when you also have those players, you also allow yourself some salary cap relief by having guys at the rookie cap instead of playing, mid-level guys for guys that could do the job at a younger level.
Dan was definitely handcuffed, but with everything that had gone on with the previous group, I That said, I think the expectation here was for this group to be farther along than it is now.
Steve, you and our guest were talking about the Vancouver Warriors, 4-7 on the season. We talked about this at the start of January, or probably start of February, Steve, before this team went on their six-game run, which ends against Georgia this weekend for February. And we said 3-3, very minimum, 4-2 has you in the conversation. They need to win against Georgia to go 3-3 in the month of February. But more important than that, and I mentioned this to Adam in the last segment, Georgia's 5-4 right now. If you put them to 5-5, the way that the wild card works this year, you still keep them in range for one of the wild card spots because of the way that it's weighted this year with two expansion teams out in the East and the North Division. The West beats up each other, and they might only get two teams in. Georgia staying in touch at 5-5 makes this a massive game for not just Vancouver, but for the entire Western Division.
Oh, I think so. I think in the West you're going to have to get to 10 wins. That's going to be the challenge for the Warriors, and you're going to need to beat teams like Georgia to get to that.
6-2 down the stretch is what they have to do. The one thing we haven't seen.
It's doable if they play like the team we saw, earlier in the year. It's not doable when you're giving up 10 goal runs.
No, you're right, and I'm not taking anything away from the team. I mean, I'm embedded with the team, so let's be clear on this. I need to see a 3-game win streak. I need to see a 2-game win streak or a 3rd game where you're in it and you're there. And the last 2 weeks, what we've seen have been teams in Toronto who are very tough, and San Diego who took advantage of opportunity to take that full advantage of what's going on with Vancouver and to take advantage of a team that doesn't get any shortcuts because of the fact that they're not quite at the talent level that other teams are in this league yet.
I hate to harp on this, but they needed to win that game, the home game against the Seals. I think that really hurt them. I think there were some wins there early in the year that were there for the taking that are going to haunt them and force them to win some big games down the stretch to get back in this thing.
Steve, do you look at what's going on with Mitch Jones right now? What I mean by that is that for the last two games, teams have almost Russell Wilsoned him. They've almost got a spy on him and said, we're going to let you beat us with anybody but Mitch Jones. And I look at this two ways. Number one, Jones as an elite player in this league, or let me reclassify that. Jones, if he wants to be an elite player in this league, has to find that third gear and those third set of moves to get around that situation. Or two, someone else, please stand up and
someone
help
else,
Mitch Jones. Yeah.
To see him get in that fight at the end when they needed him on the floor, I think was pretty telling. It suggested a certain frustration level for me. And I think there's a group of guys up front that are going to have to try and find ways to get the pressure off of Mitch Jones, because he's been superb beginning to end. I think he needs some help.
When Mitch Jones is in on 60% of your goals, he's an MVP candidate to be sure, but at the same time, he can't do it by himself. And that's part of, and it's not saying that everyone else isn't doing their job. Keegan Ball's having a good year, but Jordan McBride's slowed down a little bit the last couple of games. Joel McCready was not a factor last game, and it's either hit or miss with Joel. Logan Schuss was okay in the first half, but the entire team was terrible in the second half. There's guys, Riley Lowen had a decent game, had 3 goals, his first 3-goal game with the Warriors, but having run through that section of guys and Lyndon Bunio playing when he plays, someone's got to step up. Logan Schuss, Keegan Ball, guys
transition
like that.
Game.
And the transition game has to find them 3 or 4 goals as well. And the transition game for the last 2 games has not shown them anything.
Again, I think there's a lot of culprits right now. There's a lot of blame to go around for why this team is where it sits right now, and it needs a lot of guys to take a look in the mirror and figure it out, or we're looking at another year without playoffs.
I felt bad for Steve, you and our guest, by the way. I felt bad for Eric Penny. In the sense that the problem that you have when you go on runs like this is that you ask your goalie to make a save, and when you get a team, I don't care if it's San Diego, Rochester, pick a team, when they have a chance to have as many good looks as they had on Penny, they literally found their range on him and he had no answer. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was beating him from 10, 15, 20 feet out. And you're like, oh, he should have that. No, the looks are so good. And these guys, Casey Jackson, case in point, had 5 goals. When they find their range, they're the best in the world for a reason. They can find their range on these guys, and that's why the defensive proficiency has to be there for Penny as well.
They didn't check well. They didn't win loose balls. They didn't get the ball up the floor, and they didn't run out the clock on the other end. I mean, Eric Penny needs to be better, but the whole group needs to be better. I think there was 2 or 3 goals that Eric Penny would obviously want back, but again, there was some goals where, when you looked at the highlight, there wasn't a Warrior checker in the shot, and you can't have that. They need to be better. You can't give up those kind of runs and have any chance of winning.
Do you burn the tape on this game, or do you try and show the team, instead of what they didn't do right, what they've done right against Colorado, what they did well against New England, to just kind of give them, show them where they had their confidence this year and see if they can find it that way?
Dave, I think it's time to really kind of lay down the law and say, hey, we've given you guys a chance. We're in this spot. You need to figure it out. If you don't figure it out, we're going to have to do something drastic. I think we're to that point. I think if you look at the traction this team got early in the year from all the social media stuff, I think the organization has done a great job of setting this season up well. I think it's up to the players to make sure it finishes well.
Well, and it starts against Georgia here at Rogers Arena on Saturday night. Always appreciate the conversation, Steve. I know it's been a busy day for you. I'll let you get back to writing things for the province and for Post Media. And thanks for taking the time out tonight.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
All right, that was Steve Ewan from the province. And again, we're not cherry-coating or sugar-coating what's going on with the Warriors. The Warriors aren't happy with being 4-7. They're not happy with how they're playing their game right now. And the best thing that could happen to them right now is to get into a bit of a win streak, try and get things going. The Georgia Swarm are going to be a tough out. But Vancouver, as I mentioned with Steve, they had a good game against the Swarm last year in Gwinnett. Had them down late in the game, only to let them get off the floor. This is something that has to change if you're the Vancouver Warriors. Before we get out of here on Warriors Weekly tonight, Sportsnet 650, I've mentioned this throughout the show, but I want to bring in David Camuzzi, Senior Director of Business Operations, to talk more about this weekend and Country Night, brought to you by Budweiser. Hey, Dave, how are you doing tonight?
I am great. How are you?
Always good to talk about lacrosse. And this weekend, we did this last year. Country Night was a big success at Rogers Arena. Walk us through what Country Night looks like this year for everybody.
You bet. You've talked about the artists, so we've got some great local artists lined up. We've got Hillside Outlaws from is a small band from Penticton that's going to be playing. We've got Kadu. We've got Karen Lee Batten, of course. She's synonymous with country music here in the province of British Columbia. And we're very excited to have Sean Austin, Vancouver-born country music artist, who's got a number of songs on the playing on the radio right now. So he and along with Karen Lee Batten will be doing a post-game concert, whereas Hillside Outlaws and Kadu and Karen herself will be playing as the game goes on, a halftime, pregame, that sort of thing. So, and your ticket, with your ticket, obviously you get access to the concert post-game, so it's going to be great. We also are encouraging everybody to wear your finest country gear, because we're going to be looking for people and giving out some prizes. We've got some great country artists coming to Rogers Arena in the next little bit. Bands like the Zach Brown Band, Miranda Lambert. So we've got some tickets for that we're going to be giving away. What else can I tell you? JRFM is going to be on site with their street team, handing out prizes, activating with our fans. Budweiser has really stepped up. Obviously, they're the sponsor of the night. They've given us a bunch of plaid country shirts, a bunch of Budweiser cowboy hats. So we're going to be kind of doing what we call surprise and delight, just looking for people and handing those out. And one thing for the kids maybe not just for kids, but we've got an inflatable mechanical bull in the concourse. I can tell you last year that thing was lined up, so we brought it back. Really excited to have that. If you're lucky enough to get down to the Bud Zone, we're going to be converting that into the Bud Saloon, and just a whole bunch more stuff happening So we're pretty excited about this Saturday.
David, when you identified last year what worked for you, I know Country Night was one of those things. What made Country Night so special for the fans and for everyone at Rogers Arena?
Well, I think it's obviously the music component. You know, we've got some wonderful country music artists here right in our backyard. And so, you know, any time that we can showcase, you know, the bands that I talked about and the music that we're producing here in British Columbia, and it's kind of a unique thing having a post-game concert after you've watched a thrilling lacrosse game. So I think it's that... that is exciting for everybody to come out and witness something that maybe they haven't seen before. And whether you're a country music fan or not, it's always a great time, and the energy is really high for that game.
So VancouverWarriors.com, or you can go 604-899-4625, option number 3. Anything else you want to tell us? Oh, by the way, a little bit of dodgeball going on as well.
A little bit of dodgeball. We partnered with Urban Rec. So we have a 12-team tournament happening pregame. And then the finals will be played at halftime. So a very quick kind of 4-minute game just to showcase what Urban Rec can bring, a great partner of ours. And so in terms of tickets, we've got a number of different options. The Bud Zone, which is quickly selling out, but that's a $19.95 ticket, and that it comes with a beer. Floor access ticket. So we've done something for the concert. It's a $27, $28 ticket, but that gets you a wristband. That'll get you on the floor right in front of the stage. We're only going to allow 1,000 people on the stage. So that's something that you want to look for. And for families, of course, I want to continue to impress upon families to come on out. We've got our Family Zone tickets, and this is a $24.95 ticket. As long as you have one child with you under the age of 16, each ticket comes with a hot dog, a medium soft drink, and a $10 Subway gift card. So we're almost giving the stuff away. So come on out to Country Music Night. It's going to be a great time.
VancouverWarriors.com. You can also call 604-899-4625. Always lots of fun down there at Rogers Arena. We'll see you at the rink on Saturday. David, thanks for your time tonight.
Thank you, David.
That was David Camuzzi, Senior Director of Business Operations for the Vancouver Warriors. I want to thank David, Adam Levy, and Steve Ewan for being our guests. Thank you for listening for the last hour. We look forward to seeing you down at Rogers Arena soon. Hopefully you can make it this coming Saturday for Country Night. Get your tickets at VancouverWarriors.com or go and call 604-899-4625. On behalf of the Vancouver Warriors, my name is Dave Sheldon. Have a great night. You listen to Warriors Weekly right here on your home of lacrosse, Sportsnet 650.